Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wake Up to Purpose with your host, John Stanko. This program will help you find your purpose and, more importantly, how to make your purpose work for you. And now, here's John Stanko.
Hello out there in Internet land. This is John Stanko, your host for Wake Up to Purpose. And were you looking for me on Monday? Were you looking for my show with Proverb Newsom from Urban Youth Impact? Well, if you were, you couldn't find it because we had technical difficulties beyond our control. Proverb was calling me from South Florida, and it was just a bizarre situation where it seemed like all of the cell phone networks were down. And so he had no office phone, desk phone to call from. He kept trying to call from his cell phone. He got on once or twice, and then the call would drop. And so we have rescheduled for a week from today. If you're paying attention to live, if you're listening to this in the archives, it won't make any difference. You just look for Proverb Newsom in the archives if you were looking for his show. And if it is on or after June the 24th, you will certainly find it. But today, we are moving on, and we have a guest all the way from South Africa, my friend Glenn McQuirk, who is the founder of the Map for Life Institute. And he is on hold, and he is waiting to come on. And I saw Glenn just about a year ago in July when I was in South Africa. Had a couple of wonderful meals with him and his wonderful wife, Anne, and so looking forward to getting caught up with him. Now, as I've told you on past shows, I do not give the guests coming on any advance warning. We don't go over questions. I don't even, when I do a sound check, when they call in, ask how they doing, what's going on, because then they've already told me, and they may not tell you something that they've already told me, because in their mind, they've said that, and I just want it to be spontaneous. Plus, this isn't a programmed program. This is friends and associates and colleagues and comrades talking to one another, and we allow you to listen in, and the more, the merrier. So Glenn McQuirk will be joining us in just a moment. I just finished Facebook Live a few minutes ago, and I have been doing a live broadcast three times a week. Earlier in the pandemic, I was doing it every day. So now Monday, Wednesday, and Friday are my media days. And I've done that because I just need a little bit more unfettered, unbroken time to work on some of the manuscripts that I have. And I've got some good projects that I'm working on for other people. One of them I sent off last night, and we went over it this morning, and we're really pleased in where it's at, although it's going to need some more work. It's a little rough around the edges, but we are we're well on our way to finishing it, and then I've got several others that I just can't wait to release to the public. So, and I've got a few of my own. But, you know, you can't work on those things. You know, and there's some things you can do 15, 20 minutes at a time, but you need an hour or 2 hours. So that's why I've made some adjustments in my schedule to continue to connect with people as I can around the world through social media, but at the same time, I do the work that I have before me to do. Also, yesterday I was on a planning call for my next trip, which is out to the Midwest and the West in about a month. And so looking forward to that. Looking forward to just seeing what's out there and what the airports look like and what have you. And so, but apart from that, not a whole lot on the schedule for the rest of the year. So we're going to keep working and writing and broadcasting and developing new material. I talked to my videographer this morning after we did three sessions on Monday. I had some ideas for the next project that we can work on. And all of this is, of course, to put on the app, the Purpose Quest International free mobile app. So please go to Google Play or go to the iTunes Store or go to Amazon Internet. Find Purpose Quest International. Purpose Quest is one word, and download that that app. I've got about at least 15 hours of really high quality video content on the app, and it connects us in a really good and quick and efficient way, and it gives you access to this show, gives you access to my blog, to the Monday Memo, all of those things. So Purpose Quest International, the app, please avail yourself of it. And inch by inch, more and more people are signing on and using it. I put the daily devotional on every morning, at least it's morning for me. So download the app. Let me turn that off. I turn some things on and some things off, depending on what I'm doing, and I don't always remember to turn the right one off. So, I think that's about it. A lot of the other things I talked about on Facebook Live, just about those projects that I was working on. I do want to read another psalm. This is a different psalm than I just read on Facebook Live. Since we have started doing this show again, I have been reading a psalm. We started with Psalm 91, and we read that for almost 2 months. Now we've moved on. And so let me read to you Psalm 108. This is a psalm of David. We believe David wrote at least 70 to a few more than 70 of the 150 psalms. This is the second psalm in the fifth book of the Psalms, and there was a strategy behind the various books in the mind of the editors who took all these psalms and put them in some kind of order. And I have a book, My Enemies, My Friends, that's a fable, a story, but it teaches about the structure of the book of Psalms and the message in the structure that goes beyond the message of the individual Psalms. But Psalm 108, Psalm of David, "My heart, O God, is steadfast. I will sing and make music with all my soul. Awake, harp and lyre. I will awaken the dawn. I will praise you, Lord, among the nations. I will sing of you among the peoples. For great is your love, higher than the heavens. Your faithfulness reaches to the skies. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let your glory be over all the earth. Save us and help us with your right hand, that those you love may be delivered. God has spoken from his sanctuary. In triumph I will parcel out Shechem and measure off the valley of Succoth. Gilead is mine, Manasseh is mine, Ephraim is my helmet, Judah is my scepter, Moab is my washbasin, and on Edom I toss my sandal. Over Philistia I shout in triumph. Who will bring me to the fortified city? Who will lead me to Edom? Is it not you, God, you who have rejected us and no longer go out with our armies? Give us aid against the enemy, for human help is worthless. With God we will gain the victory, and he will trample down our enemies." Now, you know, David probably wrote that in 1100 B.C., you know, around then, and that psalm was fit into the order of the psalms probably 6 centuries later when the Jews were in the Babylonian captivity. So the editors took a psalm that had a message that David was communicating, and they fitted in to a message that the book of Psalms was communicating. And it really is a fascinating study, and so has enhanced my appreciation for the book of Psalms. Well, that's enough of that. We've got a visitor in the waiting area here that has called us from a long way off, and we want to bring him on the show. Glenn McQuirk, my friend, welcome to Wake Up to Purpose.
Thank you very much, John. It's wonderful to be joining you this afternoon.
Yes, it's been almost a year, although we've communicated back and forth by email. Glenn, before we get into let our listeners know a little bit more about you, talk to us about the pandemic, or the impact of it in South Africa, and maybe some of the impact on your own life, your family, and your work.
John, I think in South Africa we were all prepared for a 3-week lockdown, and everyone felt that they could handle that quite easily. And of course, we almost at 3 months now. So it has been affecting people quite considerably, especially in the recent weeks. Although we've moved from a lockdown level 4 to a level 3, which allows at least some people to get back to some form of normality. I think from a family perspective, Anne has been involved with the kind of essential service side, so she hasn't been too housebound. But it's been very exciting from my perspective. I've had great opportunity to work on things that otherwise I didn't have time to. So I've actually felt like I've been more busy in these 3 months than I have previously. So I don't know if that gives you a picture on what we're experiencing here in South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's similar to my own situation. I mean, I hunkered down right away and got to work, and you know, have done a lot of things that untraveled time would allow me to do. But at the same time, in the States, you know, we've emerged and emerging in various areas, and now we have we see cases spiking. So we're still trying to figure out what does this mean? What are the long-term implications? What's it going to look like in 3 or 4 months? Our professional sports teams are still trying to resume, but not sure what they can do, and even the players themselves aren't sure what they want to do. In South Africa, were there a lot of cases? And I don't know how I would qualify a lot, but what was your perspective on the overall impact of the virus itself?
John, I think from my perspective, I didn't spend a lot of time watching the media and keeping track of all the details. But the recent count, I think, put the deaths at just over 2,000 people. And some of those, you know, are a little bit questionable as to whether they were COVID-related or not. And of course, you know, in Africa, there's many other things that affect our lives far more severely than the COVID pandemic. So maybe it gives a different perspective. And so I think a lot of people are fairly frustrated because of the lockdown situation. Because, you know, we've got many other diseases, et cetera, that take up, that will take many
lives. Malaria, AIDS, you know, other things that have been devastating the nations there for quite a bit of time. Well, is travel opened up, or is as far as you know, is the airport still closed, or is it within the country, or travel allowed, or what's the travel status?
Travel is still restricted. I live on the flight path for the Johannesburg International Airport, and we are seeing very few planes come in or leave. So the local travel is, they're starting to bring it back on, but it's more for essential business trips. And what did occur, there was an interesting thing when they allowed us to go back to lockdown 3 or level 3. There was a little bit of a spike in the number of new cases, but I think that would be put down to the fact that a lot more people were suddenly being tested at various places. So I think we're expecting our government to be making a decision sometime fairly soon in the days ahead to allow us to maybe go down to level 2 or even further.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, our thoughts and prayers are certainly with our brothers and sisters and our friends in South Africa. And so, Glenn, let's go back now. Give our listeners a little thumbnail sketch. Tell our listeners about Glenn McQuirk, who he is, and how he spends his time.
Well, for those people who are not familiar with South Africa, they may know Africa. I was born in the city of East London, which is on the southern tip of Africa, and I grew up on a farm. So I come from a farming background. My parents used to always say that one needs to get a good education, and if you get a good education, life will be better for you, son. And I ended up studying civil engineering. And after returning to start work, I think after a few days of working, I suddenly realized it was quite different to what I had imagined. And so 5 years after starting as a civil engineer, I began to explore other areas. I started my own consulting business. And later on, Map for Life came to be. But before I tell you about that, I met my wife, Anne, at the University of Natal in Durban, which is also a coastal city. And we have been married since 1989. We have three children. My eldest daughter is married and living in the UK at the moment. And I have my son, who's studied theology and education. And my youngest son has just completed his schooling career. So that's where we are. And I recently lost my father. And so we've sort of gone through that process. And of course, it's difficult, especially, you're talking about lockdown issues. My mother has been on her own for this period. And so I think it's been quite difficult for her. But she has kept herself busy doing things. And so we keep in communication. And I think, that's a little bit of my background. Maybe you can
our
ask
condolences.
Another question.
Sure. Our condolences on the passing of your dad, and so many of situations like you just described. Our missions pastor yesterday told me his mother's 97. She's in a home and she just doesn't know what's going on, but they can't go and comfort her. They can't go hold her hand. And there has been quite a human and relational toll taken by this lockdown and quarantine and sheltering in place. Let's go back to, okay, you're a civil engineer. I mean, you study for this, you get into it. How did you know that it wasn't the right fit for you? And how did you have the courage to, most people just double down. I mean, this is what I studied. This is what I'm going to do. You're not supposed to really like your job. You just do it. Talk to us about that process that led you out of doing what it was that you had studied to do.
I think as I said earlier, my very first week in the corporate environment was sort of a shock. I was expecting to be able to be creative and do, or rather fulfill, the dreams and ideas that I had as a civil engineer. And I quickly found out that the client actually is the person who has the dreams and the ideas, and I'm merely there to fulfill their dreams and ideas. And so that made it a difficult start, but I had commitments. Like many young people, you have a bursary or study loan, and so I decided I would stick it out until at least that was paid off. And I was maybe getting closer to Map for Life. I'd already started my own consulting business, and one Friday morning, in fact, it was the 19th of March, 1999. I opened pulled the bottom drawer of my filing cabinet out, and inside this drawer were all the notes of the many seminars I had attended and the sermons I'd listened to. And I used to make an asterisk next to things that were important. So I was busy browsing through these files and looking at all the important things that I'd noted. And I saw there was a pattern. And the pattern was that I was having great dreams and ideas, but I was doing nothing about them. And I realized, as an engineer, people would pay a lot of money for me to plan a pipeline or some kind of structure or road or whatever it might be. And yet there I was, after leaving university 10 years earlier or 12 years earlier, I'd had no plan for my life. And so that morning, I decided I'm going to put together a manual to enable me to put my plan together for my life. And as I had that thought, I realized that other people probably also have the same need. And that's where Math for Life was born. And I think to leave, you know, getting to your question about how does one leave, it was a process for me at that stage. So in 1999, I put together the manual, or what we call Map for Life today. But it was a gradual period of over a seven-year period where I had I got to a point where I realized I couldn't grow Map for Life and remain involved in engineering. And I made the decision to move from being a civil engineer to being a life engineer. So I think I'm still very much an engineer in my thinking, but just applying it in a very different space.
Yeah, yeah. If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Glenn McQuirk from South Africa, the founder of Map for Life Institute. And, okay, you've mentioned Map for Life several times. I am holding the 2018 version of Map for Life in my hand. The byline is your personal lifestyle coach. Describe for our listeners what is the Map for Life and how have you structured it? So how can people use it?
I think one of our trainers in Tanzania put it this way. He said, Map for Life doesn't have the answer, but it's a tool to help you find your answer. So MAP stands for My Action Plan or Master Action Plan. And what we find, you know, as I've been traveling around Africa and elsewhere in the world, I find that every young child has the ability to dream or to imagine. But it seems like only a few select people ever get to see their dreams become a reality. And as I began to look at this, I realized that everything that exists, you just have to look around the space where you are right now. Everything that you see was obviously somebody's idea or dream. But the thing that we're missing is that there was a clearly written or documented plan or master action plan, which preceded the existence of the things around us. And so Map for Life is really giving a person the opportunity to document their dreams, and by doing that they are literally taking the first step for those dreams to become a reality. I can share a bit about the process if you'd like me to.
Oh, please. Yeah, go ahead.
So I think the there's a five-step process that we follow to help people together their map. And the first is to establish their position, to take a look at, you know, where am I right now? How balanced is my life? And very often, people's lives are kind of up and down, and they never know exactly where they are. They don't realize how imbalanced their life is. So the first is just to take a really good look at where am I right now? And the second step is to determine your destination. Where am I going? What are my dreams? And in writing these things down, we begin to reveal what our real passions are. And that often leads to people discovering their purpose. So first, establish your position. Second, determine your destination. The third step then is to put together or to prepare a clear plan. And we have templates that people can work through to really verify that they're pursuing. And then to carefully set a plan that they can then, in the fourth step, act upon. So the fourth is to take meaningful action, and finally, to record the results and learn from the lessons as we go through life.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the five steps, John.
Mm-hmm. Now, you started to do this, saw your purpose was to be a life engineer. You couldn't do that and still be a civil engineer. Talk to us about how Map for Life has progressed over the years, and talk to us about the whole concept of a Map for Life Institute.
When I started in 1999, maybe I should just tell you a bit about that, because I'd opened that filing cabinet drawer and immediately went to my office inside my home and sat down and worked 18 hours a day for 3 days until I began to feel ill. And I took this manuscript that I'd started and put it back in that same filing cabinet. It sat there for a further 6 months. And it was during the Y2K issue, which I'm sure you recall, and I suddenly realized that here I am at the dawn of a new millennium. And what is it that I'm going to bring to life? And that was when I began to really complete what I'd started. Because up until that point in my life, I was very much a good starter. And I would tell people I was a poor finisher. But in actual fact, I just never finished. So Map for Life had an interesting start. We put the first manuals or first books into the bookstores in December 1999, and I was very enthusiastic and believed that everybody would grab this book and begin to use it. So initially, it didn't go quite as at an exciting pace, but I've kept committed to it, because it's really, you know, I've had confirmation in terms of my purpose and so on. And so I really kept at it. And I was on the plane returning from Zimbabwe some years ago. In fact, I think it was 2005. I'd met you at the celebration at a church in Zimbabwe. I don't know if you remember this. I think it was May of 2005 or 2006.
Right.
And on the way back, somebody asked me, how many countries have you managed to get Map for Life to? And I was about to shout the answer out, and it was in that moment that I realized I hadn't actually taken Map for Life to any country myself. However, people in over 90 countries were using Map for Life at that time. So Map has kind of progressed as a result of people purchasing the book in South Africa, and friends sending it to others abroad. And we've been very clear with our vision and objectives right from the outset, and that is to be established in 200 countries around the world, and we've steadily been progressing towards that. Despite the fact that this is our official launch year, a lot of people say, how can you be launching? You've been around for 21 years. Well, the last 21 years have been testing and experimenting and trying different things, and now we're ready to enter into our next 21-year phase, which is really preparing to launch Map for Life.
And be more specific when you say launch Map for Life. What can you share some of the vision of what you see, you know, being in a nation? What does that mean? Just put a little more flesh on those bones.
John, the first part of launching Map for Life is to make sure that we put all of our learning in the last 21 years together, so that we can provide, or rather package, Map for Life in a very simple and easy to use, as a simple, easy to use tool, which we've made a lot of progress on, and people are already using some of the materials that we've prepared. But in terms of establishing in a new country, what does it mean? We would like to have a person taking responsibility for a territory, like a country, supported by a number of trainers and coaches, so that every city and every town or village has access to a real live trainer or coach to assist them and help them through the process. Because I think going through Map for Life itself is very easy. What's important is that we become part of an accountability framework and that people can tap into a support structure. And that's what we'd like to create, a physical support structure within each country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, go ahead. Keep going.
I think that just in terms of our the launching in different countries, we've been for the last 18 months doing what we call a Dreams program. And that program mm-hmm. has really been to equip, it's like a train the trainer program, equip people who want to get involved with Map for Life. And so I see us doing a lot of those kind of programs in different countries where we get 20 to 30 people together who are interested in becoming trainers or coaches. And we take them through a 3-day in-class motivational training followed by 13 weeks of practical application and accreditation. And that is a plan. We've done it in 7 countries in the last 18 months, and it's very effective. And I can see that being the way that we roll things out globally.
Yeah. Yeah, I am holding in my hand, and I want to go back to what you just mentioned. I'm holding these 3 magnificent books, booklets, or whatever the terminology would be, that are called Dreams. And the bottom of the page, there is Good for Growth Mozambique, Good for Growth Ghana, and Good for Growth Botswana. Be a little more specific. Again, how did these books that I'm holding come together? What was the process? And who are these people that are featured in these various Dreams books?
What is exciting about that program, it was initiated by one of our members who's been using Map for Life since 2006, I think April 2006, and he has been applying Map for Life in his own life and in his company and has seen the results of that. And they decided as an organization, as part of their investment into the communities that they operate, they decided to do a Map for Life program under the banner of Dreams, because obviously it was all about equipping people to identify and then put a plan together to achieve their dreams. So the first one that we did was in April of 2018, and that was done in Madagascar. I think that was one of the books that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that attended that particular program were young entrepreneurs, young professionals, between the ages of 20 to 30, I think, was the age group. We had a couple more senior people involved as well. And each of them, towards the end of the program, were required to define their dream and to communicate that. And we captured those dream stories in the form of the dream books that you have there in front of you. And that was a very exciting process. The one in, since I'm talking about Madagascar, the very first one was a dream to have a chocolate factory, if I recall. And that young man is just to give you a bit of his story, he's an orphan. His mother passed away. She was a medical doctor working in the rural areas of Madagascar. I think she picked up one of the diseases that she was treating, maybe something similar to what we're experiencing now. And so he lost his mother when he was 18. His father died at a much earlier age. And we met him at the age of 24. He went through the Dreams program and with great passion talked about his desire to have chocolate being made in Madagascar as opposed to sending the beans into Europe and then importing the chocolate back. And he's made some real exciting progress. Just 6 months ago, I received some photographs of his first samples of chocolates that have been made. Oh. And so it's really exciting to see those dreams that have been documented actually starting to become a reality today. Oh. And so we've been to a few other countries as well besides those that you mentioned, but the story is the same. You know, a lot of people look at Africa and they kind of, I think there's a term that often is used, dark Africa. And I want to tell those who are listening that during our Dreams program, we've discovered that there are incredible and exciting dreams that young people are passionate about, which I really feel and believe that's going to transform Africa. And it's just mm-hmm. exciting to see that.
Yeah, I didn't have Madagascar. I had Mozambique right next door. And but you know, I just opened the book. Yeah, I opened Mozambique randomly. And again, these are some of the best put together book projects I've seen. So here's just in the center of this booklet, Orlando Joaquim, 26, imagines himself as a bird who takes flight and spreads his great joy for life around the world. And then it's a quote, "I want to go into the world and take happiness and freedom to others," says the charismatic young man. Then there's a picture of him, then there's his name, Orlando, and a subtitle, "Aims to reawaken the dreams of destitute people." And then you have some quotes and some material about him below that. "But my first step towards realizing this big dream starts here. I want to help children and people living on the streets of Maputo." And Orlando envisions the building of an orphanage or shelter in Maputo that will include a revival center. On the other page, there's Fernanda, offers the rejected and unwanted a different life. When Brazilian Fernanda Rosenda Franco first visited Mozambique in 2006, she fell in love with the country and its people. Its children touched her profoundly. And then there is 1, 2, 3, 4, about a 5 or 6 paragraph explanation of Fernanda. Now, are you saying that all this emerged out of the 3-day session of the Map for Life? Is that correct?
And the story of, I mean, Orlando that you just spoke about there, just an amazing story. He again, he's got this, he grew up in an orphanage himself.
Mm-hmm.
Although he's, I think he studied engineering or something like that. He is Portuguese, his language he speaks is Portuguese. So he also is a poet and writes wonderful mm-hmm. poems. And just the way that he explained his dream, it was so moving in terms of the passion that he has for the people that are in the situation that he was as a young child. So it was, yeah, it was really a really good experience. All of those stories, in fact, and it comes out of the program itself, because one of the conclusions of the 3 days is to define the process helps you to define with clarity what your real mm-hmm. dream is, because a lot of people have it kind of wishy-washy ideas and maybe many ideas
mm-hmm.
that they'd like.
Mm-hmm.
What this process does helps you to filter up the very best idea and then to
yeah.
put your energy into that.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking to Glenn McQuirk, the founder of Map for Life Institute, and we've been specifically the last few minutes talking about the Dreams program, where he takes the Map for Life program into various countries, does 3 days of training, and then produces these magnificent follow-up books of the people who were impacted by the training that they have sat through. And I'm looking through the Botswana one, and there's making Botswana a human resources hub. There's somebody solving humanity's problems through enterprise and entrepreneurship, a story fit for Hollywood. This is just, and you know all these folks. You have, in most cases, personally seen these purpose transformations through the program that you develop.
Yes, I was directly involved in all of these training sessions. A lot of those, almost all of the people that participated were first-time users of MAP, or their first time exposed to MAP for Life at these events.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
It was just exciting. And I think you know, one of the really exciting stories that we haven't recorded in the Dreams books yet, but which was part of the inspiration for the Dreams program, was a young girl, Lupita Nyong'o from Kenya, who in 2006 was originally exposed to MAP4Life, but it was only in 2010 that she finally began to use the process. And her big goal that she arrived at after going through the process was to become an actress. Mm-hmm. And 3 years later, she was awarded an Oscar for her part in 12 Years a Slave. And that was just, and in her acceptance speech, she said, "It doesn't matter who you are or where you're from, your dream is valid." And that was those words were what inspired the Dreams program, is that we felt that surely if this could help Lupita do what she's done, there's many, many, many more people that have those same dreams but feel they aren't qualified to be able to pursue them.
Yeah. So talk about your launch year. You said 2020 was to be your launch year, and of course we had Mr. Pandemic show up and uninvited to the party. You know, what are you still envisioning? What are your plans? What are your thoughts for 2020?
What was interesting is that in 2019, when we were busy planning our launch event, in fact, I had set the dates, I'd even done video marketing and so on of the event, which was to be from the 29th of March to the 4th of April, 2020. And this was something that had been recorded back in 2013 already. We had put those dates together. But during the course of last year, I was asked the question, does it have to be on those dates? And I said, well, you know, when I started with MAP4Life, I never set a specific date back in 1999. I just said 2020 because, John, you will know I wear spectacles, so my eyesight is not so great, and I was always told I did not have 2020 vision. And so in 1999, I realized I had an opportunity to have 2020 vision at least once in my life. So I set the goal to launch MAP4Life in the year 2020. And so during the course of last year, when I was being asked some questions about the date, I said, well, actually, the window for the launch closes on the 31st of December 2020. Now, the way that we do the launch might have to be different. There's too many unknowns in terms of how things will work out. But the reality is this: we have said MAP4Life will launch in 2020, and no pandemic is going to stop that happening.
Mm-hmm.
The way we do it may change. It might be a virtual online launch. I don't know, but there's many, many new possibilities that we have now. And that launch event, the plan is to have various speakers who will come and talk about something which is really important, and that is purpose, which you and I are kind of the area that we work in. And so that's going to be our focus. And one of the things that has come out of these 1 years for me is that we started with the methodology in 1999, and in recent years I've realized there's a philosophy that underpins the methodology. And so it's now time to talk to people about why the methodology works and what the philosophy is, because the philosophy is about transforming the world, not conforming. And today so many people are being affected by the situation we find ourselves in right now because they're so dependent on the system that exists.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's time for us to transform that system. And that's what the launch is really going to be focusing on. also to equip people.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, good. I was just going to say, you know, you haven't mentioned faith, but you are a man of faith. You're a believer. We would put the term strong believer. How has faith played a role in this, and why wouldn't somebody see more of it necessarily when they first look at some of your materials?
When you say faith, there's different meanings of just in terms of the practical aspect of faith being taking action has mm-hmm. been something very important all the way, you know, sort of being focused on the end goal,
mm-hmm.
and realizing that God is actually there to make the provision for that call that He's placed on your life, and it's for us to step in faith to reveal the provision which He has already mm-hmm. provided. But I think the question that you're asking is, what is the from a biblical perspective,
mm-hmm.
What has been my inspiration?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a number of different revelations that maybe I've had over the years, but one very strong aspect that links very closely with Map for Life was a story by a blind man who was given sight, the Bartimaeus story.
Mm-hmm.
And I was arrived at church one morning, and the worship leader decided to read that passage of scripture. And, you know, I was in one of those frames of mind where I thought, oh, you know, I've heard this before, but anyway,
yeah,
I will
right.
listen.
Yeah.
And so I sat, and instead of listening to the words that morning, I began to dramatize the process. And I was imagining this man, Bartimaeus, and I thought, well, if I was blind and sitting on the side of the road, I would have, or rather, if I was blind, I would my hearing would have been far more acute. I would have been listening to what people would say. I would have heard that other blind people had been healed. And I would have been very aware that there was somebody that existed that was healing people of various diseases or problems and so on. And if I heard that he was coming past my town, I would make sure I was sitting on the side of the main road, knowing that he would
mm-hmm.
pass by that way. And so I was imagining this. And of course, when Jesus comes towards Bartimaeus, Bartimaeus makes sure that Jesus knows he's there. And everyone else, which is so often in life, tries to make him be quiet, or they tell him to
mm-hmm.
basically stop shouting out. He was disturbing the people. But the story goes on, and Jesus and Bartimaeus meet, and Jesus asks him, "What can I do for you?" Why is he asking this question? You know, everybody
mm-hmm.
can see that he's blind. Everyone in the village knows he's blind, and the people with him can see this, but yet Jesus asks him, "What can I do for you?" And Bartimaeus says, "You know, I'd like to see." And then Jesus says something interesting. He says, "Well, your faith has made you well," or words to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I went back and I started reading the scripture more closely, I realized that Bartimaeus was, in those days, would have been wearing something to identify him as a blind person, maybe a cloak of some kind. And when
mm-hmm.
Jesus called him to come, Bartimaeus took off that which defined him as a blind person. And when he came and stood before Jesus, he was standing as if he was a person who had sight, because he no longer had his blind identity. He had already identified him as a blind person. And that is what faith is all about. And it was in that moment that a very well-known passage of scripture, which is quoted by people from many different faiths, and that is, "Ask and you shall receive, Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be open. And this scripture came into my mind in that morning, and I couldn't get it out of my head. And as I was picturing these three statements, they began to fade, and all that was left were the three words, ask, seek, and knock. And I had those three words in my mind, one below the other, and then the letters began to fade away from the right-hand side towards the first characters of each letter. And when I saw those first three characters, they spelled ASK, A-S-K. And for me, that became the hidden message. And it was then that I realized one of the fundamental principles with MAP, it gets people to ask the desires that are on their heart. And when they start connecting with the desires of their heart, which are actually placed there, you were talking or read Psalms early on. There's a scripture, Psalms 34 verse 7, I think it is, or 37 verse 4, where it says, if we delight ourselves in the Lord, He gives us the desires of our heart. When I was younger, I thought if I desired a Ferrari, He'd give me a Ferrari. But now I understood that what it means is that God places desires in our hearts. And when we connect with those desires, it's then that the provision for that vision which is placed in our hearts is made evident or becomes available when we step in faith.
Yeah.
So I think, carry on.
No, go ahead.
So that was, so that's one of, you know, one of the sort of scriptures that's been very strong for me in terms of I've got to keep stepping, even although I cannot see how things are going to roll out. Faith requires me to ask one question, and that question is why. I need to know the why. That's the only thing I need, and then I'm a step in faith. Fear gets me to ask or requires me to ask the question, how? Because when I ask the question, how, I inevitably end up with seeds of doubt in my mind and then retreat or procrastinate and don't take action. So I'm constantly aware that irrespective of what I see with my physical eye, I need to step in faith to do what I see with my heart's eye, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I just wanted people to know that just they, because they may not see a scripture verse on every page doesn't mean that this isn't steeped in godly principles, in biblical principles, and I wanted them to know it emanates from a man of faith, from a life of faith, from a family of faith. And I would assume, too, you wanted this to be, this instrument to be available to all people and didn't want to put any barriers, you know, in front of, or in preventing that from happening. And so I think you've done just a magnificent job in putting it together, and it's very exciting that the launch is here. Glenn, we have about 5 minutes. Anything we didn't cover, anything you'd like to say to the listeners, any aspect of your life or MAP for Life Institute that you would like to emphasize or include?
I think just a word of encouragement to everyone. You know, when I started with For Life and I was young, when I say young, a lot younger than what I am today. I wrote down this vision, and the vision in its simplified form was positive global influence, and the objective was 200 countries. And immediately I had a voice inside of me saying, you know, you come from a farming background. What qualifies you to have a vision like this? And I had a lot of doubt, and I kept asking the question, you know, and the question that I was asking, I ultimately got to that point where I realized the world is already mapped, and mapped spelled MAPD, and that is that every single one born every one of the people listening to this message have been mandated. God had a purpose for them, and that purpose was known before their creation. And it's that mandate that we need to connect with. And I believe if we start listening to the desires of our heart, it enables us to connect to that mandate. The second thing was that I realized that everybody, if God has created us for a purpose, then he also anointed us with gifts and talents specific for that mandate. But the world wants to replace those gifts and talents and teach us a skill instead so that we can function in a system and fulfill other people's dreams, when all the while we've been anointed with the gifts that are perfectly suited for the mandate that he has called us for. Thirdly, we have been provisioned. And because God has given us the mandate, it's his responsibility to provide for that mandate. But for us to access that provision, we have to step in faith. We have to take the first step. And Map for Life is really enabling people to take the first step, because the first step is to actually describe, to document, and to prepare that plan to clearly communicate the vision that you have. And then the last thing, the last part, is that I believe that every single one of us is destined to fulfill the purpose that God has called us to. And so as we journey through life, when we're doing the things that are not aligned with our purpose, there's going to be that constant nagging sort of in our heart saying, you know, you're not quite in the right place. And it keeps, there's almost like a magnet that wants to pull us back to the right path. And we need to listen to that, because the system, when I say the system, what we've been taught in the schools is that decisions are made with the head, and we need to be logical about things. Then all the while, if you look in scripture, it talks about the decisions we make with the heart. The head is there for method. The heart is there for the message, and we need to find that message in our heart, not our head. And very often, it's not going to make sense, because, by the way, it's not me, but rather God through me that makes the vision become a reality. So we need to dream big. We need to take action, write those dreams down, and we will then see the miracles that we so desperately seek sometimes. We will see those miracles become a reality.
Well, Glenn, you know, I'd give you a standing ovation, but nobody could see it. You know, we've been friends for 15 years now, and we're not always together, but I certainly admire and respect what God has empowered you to do, your commitment to the task, and we're excited for you that this is the launch year, and I just can't commend or recommend what you're doing strongly enough to our listeners. So thanks for joining us today, and please give my love to your family, and let's stay in touch about that launch.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on your show.
Yep. Take care, and we'll talk to you again soon. So long. All right, Glenn McQuirk, again, mapforlife.com, the number 4, mapforlife.com. Check it out, and just Glenn's done a magnificent job, and the best is yet to come. And so I'm just so grateful that he consented to come on the show today, and I look forward to working with him more and more in the coming days. Well, Friday we're going to have another friend up in Providence, Rhode Island. Bishop Jeffrey Williams is going to talk to us about his mission to empower others. Until then, this is John Stanker, your host for Wake Up to Purpose. You heard a great story today. There was a lot to unpack. If you have to go back and listen to it again, and do what you have to do to apply those principles to be a person of purpose. So long for now.
Thanks again for listening to Wake Up to Purpose with John Stanko. To get in touch with John, you can go to www.purposequest.com or write him at johnstanko@gmail.com.